Hello and welcome to another installment of Casual Trekker. This is Scott. This is going to be my spoiler review of Scream 6. Now, I don't know all the names and all the names of the people beforehand. I'm a casual fan of this franchise. I just enjoy the characters and the dynamics and stuff like that. So I want to make sure that's clear going in. I have seen all 6 movies and I have seen them all in theaters. So I am a fan of the franchise itself. That's why I went to go see Scream 6. So the usual pattern for a Scream movie is you have the introduction to the first victim. That first victim is killed by Ghostface, and then that relates in some indirect or direct way to the centralized cast for the duration of the movie. So this one here shares a part of that by way of connection to the overall cast, but in an indirect way through like a film class. So we're introduced to this woman who she's trying to go on a date with this guy, and he calls her up and says, hey, I kind of went to the wrong place or whatever else, and I think I'm close by, whatever. And she goes out to try to find him, and then she walks across the street. He basically tricks her to go in this alleyway, and then it shifts to the Ghostface voice, and then she is killed. And before she's killed, she is mocked about how easy it was for him to get her into the alleyway. And that's when you think it's going to cut. Like, once he does that for that next slash, it's going to cut. We're going to go to the main cast, and we're going to carry on with them, finding out about the death, and then them being scared or whatever else. No, that did not happen. Instead, we lingered on Ghostface, right? We lingered on this guy. Then, he pulls off his mask, and we see who he is. Then, we follow the motherfucker. Then, we follow him home, after he talks to one of our main cast members, after he gets done killing this woman in the alleyway. He is calm, he's chill, he's just acting fine. Then he goes home, and then can't remember if he called his buddy or his buddy called him. I think his buddy called him. Then they all act like he acts all suspicious, the other guy's acting suspicious of him, and he starts thinking maybe I'm not talking to this guy, so he starts quizzing him. And then they play hot and cold, and then we find out that his boyfriend was chopped up and put into the refrigerator, which she finds, and that's when the dude dies. What makes this little exchange crazy is the fact that the first Ghostface guy, he's like, killing him was great. Once you stabbed him, they felt like just an animal, just a piece of meat. And then this whole Ghostface guy that kills the second Ghostface, that kills the first Ghostface, he's like, they're not animals. It's a person. Flesh and blood. They breathe. Everything. And I'm like, does this killer have a conscience about how people are killed? Is we going to see some kind of vigilante to the right where he only stabs people or kills people in, say, self-defense or something else like that? That is not the case. But it's this weird dynamic of how they're exchanging and talking with each other, and how one Ghostface is killing because it feels like there's a mammal and an animal, and just they seem less and less and less like a person as each stab wound goes in. And the other Ghostface is like, no, that's not the right way. That is not how you kill anybody. So then he's himself gets killed. Then we meet our main cast. Then they're all talking and chit-chatting, whatever. They're all party of five in it. And then comes to the news, and then they're like, oh no, we gotta go now. And the girl's like, I'm not gonna upgrade my college education just because some murder in New York City. Now, yes, the fact that they're in New York City and it's a big city and it's kind of overplayed just a little bit with ooh, look at us, we're in a big city, we can't overplay everything. Murder happens in every single town, in every single city, and they're always so big and there's always so many people. So the population being 3 billion or the population being 100,000, it's going to be the same thing. You're just going to get lost in a crowd easier in New York City. But if you're wielding a weapon and a knife and chasing after someone dressed up as Ghostface, you're not going to blend in. Unless, of course, you're right next to Halloween, which is when we find out this movie is set around. Apparently October 30th is when one of the people dies in the movie. But we find out that one of our lead characters, the sister to Jenny Ortega, is in therapy, and she hasn't been too honest with her therapist, and the therapist is like, well, if you aren't going to open to me, I can't help you here. And after a little while poking and prodding, she finally reveals that killing the boyfriend at the end felt good. And she described it a little bit, and he was noticeably apprehensive and like, whoa, I'm worried here, like, she's going to kill me now. And then she's like, you know what, never mind, fine, I'm just gone. Like, I'm legally bound to report this. Well, I didn't say I was going to do anything, I just said how it made me feel in this situation. So the therapist obviously was not the right person for her to be talking to, because the minute it got too dark and a little scary, he balked and had to run away really fast into his mind because he was terrified of her because of who her father is. And then this is also after the scroll through all the threats and stuff like that she showed him on his on her phone. So then we come to the part where the dad says that they found the ID and they want them to come down so they can talk. Now, this is the part that kind of got me a little irritated, maybe, at the detective guy, because just because the license is there doesn't mean that that's the killer. She could have just been there and had a date with a guy or something, or been at his house for a party and she left her ID, because sometimes you don't take your purse and everything with you, right? So you just take your cards, and all of it's in your pocket, and you're dancing, you pull out something and it falls on the ground. That doesn't necessarily put you in the apartment. Definitely doesn't put you in the position to kill anybody. So that was part of it. I was like, why are we going so quick? Because that's the vibe I was getting, that the detective was trying to go after the girl, but the evidence that we so far had at the moment wasn't exactly going in that direction. And then a simple alibi kind of takes her out of consideration. And her being on that video with the girl who started the altercation in the first place doesn't really account to anything. So I just felt like the detective was trying to put it on her for some reason. It didn't really add up to me. I was like, why is this cop going so hard on her? Then we find out that the cop's daughter is murdered. And in the apartment thing where our main cast is, the core four, as they call themselves. And we find this out from the guy across the street that the lead girl is like attracted to, but we find out later on that they've been engaged for a while. Not engaged, but like, you know, doing things. But she wants to keep him at a distance, and she doesn't want everybody to know. He sends a picture of the daughter of the cop to the friends via, I guess, airdrop, because they all got the message at the same exact time. And that's when they went to try to go save the girl. And that didn't work out too well, because that led to one girl being stabbed and a knife being turned in. And I feel, the problem with all stab movies is when you stab a character that is going to die, they don't necessarily get like viciously stabbed to death. It doesn't take that much to make someone bleed out. once you stab them a couple of times, they're pretty much dead unless they get medical attention. So the fact that he shoved it in and turned the knife, and then she didn't wasn't dead within 3 minutes, not to mention when she was climbing on the ladder. So that part, I was like, why is she lasting so long? Didn't take away from my enjoyment of the movie. It just was like, why is she taking so long to die when others have died way faster, sooner? So not only does this lady die, she dies epic. She fell off the ladder, hit her face on the trash can, and then hit the ground. Which I was like, oh my god, that poor girl. Because she felt the trash can before she died. There's no way she did not feel that impact. That's worse than being stabbed, I would think. But then they all get out of there, thanks to the boyfriend, who is all shady as hell, because he's being kept really far back in the background. He really could have been Ghostface, the Ghostface partner, the entire time. Because he's always kept far away, always stay away, you can't come here, you can't go there, I don't want anyone to know about it. He is literally, could be the prime suspect as Ghostface, really. They paint the picture that he's the guy. Going in, I'm like, okay, he's not gonna be the guy. I didn't get that vibe. I didn't feel usually these people, they have a little bit of a weirdness to them, or over eccentric, or just have a little bit of a creepy vibe to them. I didn't really get that. I got that he's like a upstanding gentleman. He was a nice guy type, and he didn't play at all like he was a ghost-faced contender. Some of this stuff is going to be out of order because I only seen this movie one time and it was last night. So I'm going with what I remember. I wrote a little bit of a flashcard so I could kind of have notes here. But so some stuff happens, and then we come to them walking down the street, and we have this scene that we saw in the trailer of the bodega. And it is quite the vicious situation here, because the girls rush in, bump into the dude, like, hey, there's a line here. And then all of a sudden Ghostface comes in, and then he kills the one guy, and then the one guy tries to shoot him with a gun. He grabs a gun, and just like in the trailer, he tries to look for the girls. And so that doesn't go too well. And they're getting close. They try to throw cans to distract them. And this is another place where I'm taking a pause, because they're in a bodega. The guy's gun was used. People ran out of the bodega because of the guns. Yet there's no police presence. You would think that people would say there's an armed robbery, or there's someone being stabbed or killed at this convenience store, so there would be a police presence faster than what there was. And so during this time, the detective, who is really working his ass off at making it look like our lead girl is the killer. I mean, he's trying really bad. Like, I got the vibe kind of like this was his last case. He wanted to retire. He wanted to be done with it. And he just wanted to put it on someone so he could say that based off her history, that would make sense. But she's supposed to be friends with his daughter. And so it didn't really make a lot of sense as to why that was happening. So there's a lot of question marks going on with the way that he was acting, with what was happening, with the relationship of his daughter to the main cast. So then we get introduced to Kirby from a previous Scream movie. I think it was 4, I think. And now she's an FBI agent. She's coming in and she's trying to investigate things. And I'm like, oh, cool. Hayden Panettiere. I haven't really seen her since, I think she was on Nashville, I think, and Heroes. After that, I didn't really catch up with her. So she looked a lot different. She definitely looked different from what she looked like in Scream 4, but that was also years and years and years and years ago, and people change. It's an actress, you know. You never know. So one person might be looking like this in one movie, and then the next movie, clean shaven and everything else, so who knows, but it's fine. Kirby was there investigating the stuff. And then we have Gal Weathers, who I feel on that one, she reverted back for some reason to post group together bonding kumbaya, where she was writing another book and she's trying to make money off of the killings, which I felt was a little bit forced. I don't think she would do something like that, especially with how the movie ended in 5, in Dewey's death. You would think that if she was going to write a book, it wouldn't be about culpability to everyone, it wouldn't be about the murders, it would be about Dewey's life. That's what you would think she would write a book about, is how the murders that were associated with him kind of shaped him going forward. And we find out that this, we find out way later that Ghostface was making Sam's life, that's the girl's name, they were making Sam's life miserable by setting up all those fake posts about how she was the one that was the true killer, and framing Richie and making everyone think that she was the one, and making me want to go back and watch Scream 5 to see if that's even a possibility, because you have to be able to be in two places at one time. You gotta both be the victim and the killer at the same time, and I don't think it works. So, and I felt like the detective was going off of that too deep, because you gotta go, how is she gonna both be the killer and the person that the killer's trying to kill at the same time? How do you frame Richie, and why is it so gung-ho? So there was a lot of things going on here with this cop that just weren't adding up to me. But he came together with him once his daughter died. He was like, let's fry this bastard. And I was like, okay, this is kind of weird, but he was on team. He was their inside guy, because he's a cop, he has the badge, he has the gun, he has resources. So they're able to lean on him a little bit. And then the group starts getting suspicious of everybody. The boyfriend said, don't trust nobody. Don't trust anyone, not even me. Which then she does, she takes them to literal heart later on by not letting them go into the theater, which I must say was amazing. I loved that theater, and I think they should make one for real. Like, have all the Scream costumes, have props from the movies inside there, clips from all the different killings, the artwork. I think it'd be a really cool exhibit. And then keep adding to it as other movies come out. Because I'm like, for the minute there, it took me out of it, because I was like, ooh, scary Scream movie stuff. And so it kind of took me out just a little bit, and they linger just a bit long on it, I think. But it would make a really good museum for Scream if they actually made it accessible to the public. I think that would be really fun. But we find out that the guy from first Ghostface apparently got this place and made a museum for some reason for Ghostface, like a big old elaborate shrine, right? And Gail finds it. She talks to Kirby and she's like, how did you not find this? Which then made a little suspect. Why didn't Kirby find it? If she's the FBI, then how come she wouldn't have been able to do more research on this? So then put a big old question mark on Kirby. Because sometimes when people are in intense situations where they are almost killed, they can have, you know, lapses, they can have, you know, situations to go on which lead them to do exactly what it is that they were a victim of in the first place. We know this from certain situations where an offense occurs, and then later on you do the same thing that was done to you onto somebody else. So that's the thing. So at that moment, Kirby had a question mark, and because of what the detective was doing, also had a question mark, because of how far in to Sam he was going. Because from what I saw, he had zero actual information that put her in the apartment, that put her in the scene, or anyone that could corroborate this theory. So I was a little confused at it. So we continue on, and we get a really good rundown of what the movie rules are, how things will happen, and who's safe, who's not safe. And then one of the people is called out immediately by saying, "You're probably the killer because you faked the roommate lottery. You wanted to get close to us, and now you are." And this is really when people start getting suspicious of everybody. Because of Sam's history, she could easily be the ghost face. Maybe she's just having a psychotic break. Maybe she's leaning into it. And from the flashes we get of her dead father from the first movie, it sounded like maybe she could be doing like a hide and seek like thing, that movie with Robert De Niro and Dakota Fanning, where she, in her mind, is lounging at home watching TV, but in reality, she's out killing people. And her father's personality took over, that she created in her mind, which I think they're going to. I feel like that's where they're going. Like Skeet Ulrich, who played him, is getting more and more stronger subconsciously. And in Scream 7, it's going to be Sam, who's actually Ghostface, but she's having lost time. She's not remembering where she's going or what she's done. She just knows she did something. And then it's gonna come to a head and find out she's Ghostface. But that's just a guess. That's just me being, wonder where they're going with this. It just seems like the natural progression of what they would do. So then the movie continues on. We get the subway scene that we saw with the lights going out and the ghost face getting closer. We have the guy that missed all of it, the roommate dude, and he's on the train with the other girl whose girlfriend died falling down the thing. She gets stabbed and no one around him is paying attention because there's a lot of commotion going on and people are asleep and they're just kneeling down. She's being stabbed, and then all of a sudden the killer stops and then gets off the train, and that's when the roommate guy walks over and sees that she's been injured, gets off the train and asks for help. Then Gail Weathers gets attacked, and this is where it becomes kind of interesting, because this ghost face, as for all the ghost faces, aren't returning characters from a previous incarnation. So the way that Ghostface is talking to Gail is like, this person has been in the franchise for a good long while and should have had an interview already, and how come it hasn't happened yet? So it's kind of like, who is this? Could this, for me, if Neve Campbell was in the movie, I'd be like, is this Neve Campbell? Did she have a break? Is she finally just, of all the victimization that has happened, but would they do that to Sidney Prescott? Would they hide this from the fans? Could this be the reveal? But no, that is not what happens here. Gail is about ready to be killed when the kids bust in to stop it from happening, and then the Ghostface person runs out. And Gail is very near death. The same thing happens to Jenny Ortega's wannabe boyfriend. He gets stabbed a lot of times by both Ghostface people. Stabs him over and over and over again. He should have been dead. But, you know, plot protection, which is fine. But he should have been dead. Him and Gail both. So that's the thing, that he was stabbed so many different times. And there was a lot of time between stabbing and police responding to help. But it's not unheard of that people do survive some vicious attacks and they're alive. You have people who get into vehicle accidents that they should not have survived. And they do, which is a miracle. But to have two miracle people not dying because of wounds suffered in direct proximity to one another, that one's a little bit, but remember, watching a movie, not real life. So then we find out Kirby has a plan to save everybody. So they try to lure Ghostface into this kill box, right? So they set it all up. If the door opens up, he gets locked in and they're gonna be able to take it. And then she walks off all kind of suspiciously, like, oh shoot, she's gonna change into Ghostface. And so then that's when we get them all being attacked, and this is when we get the reveal of what the hell is going on. And normally we get like a monologue in a Scream movie, and it's the person doing it has complete control of the surroundings of what they're doing. There's not a lot of people going on. There's not a lot of things that can happen inside. So this one here, there was a lot of moving pieces. We come to find out that it was the family of Richie. The dad, which is the detective, his brother, which is the roommate, and his daughter, which was the girl who walked in and said, oh, I'm sorry, did I clock block you? Earlier in the movie when Jenny Ortega and her wannabe boyfriend were almost having a moment. So the cop had swapped out the bodies. They faked it. They faked her death to make her be Ghostface and to put the detective more in line with the other kids to lure him into this thing. And Kirby had nothing to do with it. She was knocked out, but they were making out like she was Ghostface, talking about how she was being fired and this, that, and the other. But who's to say? She might not have been. That was just words that he said. But he had the guy look into it. Nothing came back. But still, he could have been lying the entire time, and she could have been still an active FBI agent. But she didn't do a lot of research into it. Then again, you can't just call up FBI and say, "Hey, I need to do this, this, and that." You got to have sufficient like protocol for it. So she was probably doing this off the books. So she probably didn't have her FBI resources. She was just using her badge and her presence to get stuff done. So we find out that it was Richie's museum. That was all of his stuff. The dad had got it and made all of this because his son loved movies. And they were all mad that Sam killed Richie. And this is when we learn all of the different things. This is when we learn the fake out. This big, elaborate, lots of talking scenes. But you gotta remember, it's anything can happen in and of the moment. So they had no idea how long they had before, you know, something would have like knocked on the door, or if someone would have called in something because of loud noises, stuff like that. And there's a lot of fighting going on in here, and lots of gunfire happening. So there's just a lot happening inside this monologue, or adjacent to this monologue. There's a lot of time spent in this beautiful theater, all cultivating to some really great deaths. You had Jenny Ortega hanging on by the hand, and then let me go, and she grabs a knife and she stabs the dude, and then the other girl, she kills her, shoots her in the head, and then they flip it around. Once they fall off the thing, the detective and Sam, he wakes up second, and then we hit the ghost face thing, and we get our iconic line, what's your favorite movie or whatever. And then he's shooting the things, trying to figure out where this person is at. And then he himself gets murdered too, after it looks like Sam's not going to do it. Then the cops come, that's when we find out that the boyfriend's fine, and then that's when she has the mask, and then it really seems like she's going to keep that maybe for Scream 7. And then we also have a scene inside the theater where she's talking to her dead father. She grabs his knife, that's the one that she uses to kill one of the ghost face. So that's the movie. Then she drops the mask and they walk off. And then at the end credit scene is just the girlfriend, the girl who fell off the ladder. It's just not every movie needs a mid-credit scene. I thought it was great. I'm glad I saw it in theaters. That's going to be a moment for me to remember. It sucked that I had to watch the whole entire scroll just to get to the very, very, very end. To get, not every movie needs to end credit scene. But I thought that the movie overall was good. Do I buy the fact that nobody put two and two together, that Richie's dad was the detective, that it wouldn't be on the internet somewhere, the grief of the person, the family talking out, the sister, the brother, all of those people, because that's who it was, should have been able to go, hey, isn't this so-and-so? Or it should have been came up in the investigation. I thought it was interesting, all the ghost face people, they had their DNA and stuff, and it was all going down into a countdown. You had pictures of all the different ghost face. You even had they kind of talked about each one of the situations in a small itty-bitty thing, but it still had a little bit of the talk. So you kind of got like a franchise review of the movie, which I thought was pretty cool. So overall, my favorite Scream movie, just because there wasn't a lot of lull. There wasn't a lot of like, it was condensed. It's still 2 hours and 6 minutes, but there was a lot of intense, brutal kills going on here. It's just that when the main idea is stabbing someone and they die, when you stab them, I mean, look at Dewey. He died from being stabbed, and the boyfriend is being stabbed by both Ghostface, the brother and the sister, and he survives that. That's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like 8 stab wounds. And he survives. And this is a long time from the stabbing to the end. So there's just a couple of things that took me out of the movie a little bit, but not enough to make me go, eh, this is horrible. I mean, it's a movie after all. It's meant for entertainment purposes. So it should be taken literal. And some of the cast has to survive so they can be in Scream 7. And Scream 7 could be the end of the franchise for all we know. And so this could all be cultivated into Scream 7 being the movie that matters. Like Scream 5, Scream 6, Scream 7. It's its own little package. And I quite enjoyed the bodega scene. I thought that was really good. That was obviously the dad in there, because that was a lot of brute force and stuff happening. That was definitely the dad. The rest of them were probably the kids. I think when the psychiatrist died, because he also died, it died in this movie, and then they stole her file to probably release online. I think that was the dad too, because he's a cop. He would know where to be looking for. His kids might not necessarily know where to look at, and they had to be present and accounted for. At least the son had to be present and accounted for the friends, and the daughter is supposed to be dead. So probably the dad who went there. Those are the two times he was the ghost face guy, I think, was the bodega and the therapist. The rest of them probably were the kids. But yeah, in short, 33 minutes later, I thought that Scream 6 is definitely worth watching, probably multiple times. It's got a lot of good, fun stuff in it. Once you get to the monologue scene, it gets kind of bloaty, and if you're not paying attention to the movie, it kind of runs you through it again. But that's my only issue there. That and the how do they not know the dad was also the dad of Richie. Some of the things that you have to suspend your disbelief is really high up there. Like, no cops in the bodega way sooner. But, you know, maybe they're just busy that night. Maybe there was a lot of stuff happening and they took a minute to get there. Or maybe there was none of the people knew what was going on. Who's to say? But either way, very enjoyable movie. No movie is without its flaws. Every movie has great things. Every movie has bad moments. What matters in a movie is that the good moments outshine the bad. So this one definitely had a lot of good moments. It had just a few little questionable things. And I don't know how I feel really about it being a family affair. Like literally that's went from this person to that person. There's a lot of callbacks to other Scream movies, which is fine. because you can't be wholesale unique every single time. Things are going to relate to each other just because of the nature of the beast and because of how Scream usually plays anyway. It relates to something else. So that's going to conclude this podcast on Scream 6. Thanks for listening, and you have a good rest of your day.